Welcome to the Rare Kidney Disease Show, part of the RKD Scientific Network and powered by Travere Therapeutics. We invite you to join us each episode and be inspired by the latest advancements in rare kidney disease research, management, and treatment from leading nephrology researchers and healthcare providers who are passionate about making a difference in patient outcomes. Today's podcast is an excerpt from the Rare Kidney Disease Scientific Network Summit, a collaborative event hosted by Travere Therapeutics. Travere Therapeutics is providing this podcast for informational purposes only. The audience is U.S. healthcare providers. The content of this podcast is not intended to provide medical advice. Only licensed healthcare providers can determine the right treatment for each patient. Any patients who may be listening to the podcast are encouraged to reach out to a healthcare provider. This podcast may contain opinions of our guests, which may not necessarily be that of Travere Therapeutics. Travere Therapeutics is not responsible for guest opinions. Some of the speakers and guests may be paid consultants or employees of Travere Therapeutics. We look forward to your interest in our podcast. By listening to this podcast, you acknowledge our privacy policy and terms and conditions, which can be found at Travere.com. To learn more about Travere Therapeutics and its products, visit our website. For a full list of FILSPARI's indications, warnings, cautions, and contraindications, visit FILSPARI.com. Results and patient experience may vary. U.S. federal law restricts Travere Therapeutics products to sale by or on the order of a healthcare provider. Prescription only.
Hello, I'm Professor Jonathan Barrett, the Mayer Professor of Renal Medicine in the College of Life Sciences at the University of Leicester and co-chair of the RKD Scientific Network. Welcome to the latest episode of the Rare Kidney Disease Show, which is part of the RKD Scientific Network hosted by Travere Therapeutics. In the first podcast of this series, Professor Bad Rovin discussed the management of IgA nephropathy and the current treatment paradigm. A key point raised during that episode was the need to focus on long-term outcomes for our patients. During this episode, you will hear the presentation that I gave at the RKD Scientific Network Summit held in Boston last year. Today, I want to emphasize the increasing amount of data accumulating from both the United Kingdom and the United States that further cements the need to drive proteinuria down below 1 gram per day to improve longer-term outcomes for our IgA nephropathy patients. I am sure we are all familiar with the current KDIGO guidelines, which recommend addition of renin-angiotensin system inhibitors to cardiovascular, diet and lifestyle interventions to achieve target proteinuria less than 1 gram per day. In the fictional IgA nephropathy case study that Brad presented, the patient first presented to clinic at the age of 28. To recap, he was prescribed an ARB, and after 12 months, his urinary protein to creatinine ratio was 0.7 grams per gram. This management plan is exactly as suggested by KDIGO and achieved the desired outcome. But let me ask you, is achieving a target proteinuria of 1 gram per day enough to ensure that the risk of this patient progressing to kidney failure has been optimally reduced? We need to bear in mind that most of our patients have many decades of life in front of them, and our focus must be to reduce their lifetime risk of developing kidney failure. With this thought in mind, let's listen to the data from RADAR.
So I think the first thing to say is this guy's got another 50 years to live with IgA nephropathy. So we can think about the first 12 months, we can think about the first 60 months. This guy is 28. And I'm looking at Keisha because Keisha, when she looks after children, is thinking that kind of thought in terms of what is going to happen for this kid who's going to be an adult. We tend not to do that as adult nephrologists. We think perhaps 5 years, 10 years, possibly even 20 years. But for this guy at 20 years, he's going to be less than 50. So younger than most people in this room. And he doesn't want to have kidney failure when he's 50. So I'm going to present some data from the UK experience. So we have a registry called RADAR. And this guy would have been eligible to be enrolled in RADAR because of his presenting features. And what we did is we've looked at over 4,500 patients, and this reflects UK practice. But what I can tell you is I think there's going to be some data in the ASN where people have looked at US data. And it's very similar, if not perhaps even worse, than what I'm going to show you now. So this is what we see in the UK with UK patients. So at 20 years, if you have IgA nephropathy and you're diagnosed as a child, You can see in the blue line, half of those children have developed kidney failure at 20 years. So that's in their 30s. If you're an adult diagnosed with IgA nephropathy in the UK, at 20 years, three quarters of those adults have developed kidney failure. And then if you look on the right-hand side, at the age at which the diagnosis was made, you can see, and that arrow there is how old I am, and I'm very happy not to be on dialysis or have the threat of dialysis or transplantation hanging over me. But by the time people get to my age, if you're a child diagnosed with IgA nephropathy, over three quarters of those children have developed kidney failure. If you're an adult diagnosed between the ages of 18 and 40, like this guy, then over two-thirds of those adults have developed kidney failure by the time they reach my age. And if you're diagnosed between the ages of 40 and 50, half of those adults have reached kidney failure by the time they're my age. So I think we need to be thinking, what is it like for that patient in front of us when we're thinking that far ahead, when we're thinking about them being 50 or 60, not necessarily what's going to happen in the next 5 or 10 years, which is important, but actually if we don't think the longer term, we're going to, I think, undertreat and not serve our patients well. So this is something that I think is really interesting. All this does is it takes the GFR at the time of diagnosis and says, what rate of kidney function do you need to achieve for the rest of your life to avoid kidney failure in your lifetime? So if we look here, so this guy was 28. So if we look at the 18 to 30 bracket, and we say, okay, if he has 5 mL/min/year loss of kidney function, this is based on all the GFRs at time of diagnosis in our UK cohort. 18 to 30, if he has a 5 mL/min/year loss of kidney function, every single person between 18 and 30 is on dialysis in their lifetime. The same for 3 mL/min/year. 2 mL/min/year, 89% of those patients are on dialysis in their lifetime. And that's something that when I give my talks, I ask people to go back to their own units and just look at the GFR at the time we, as nephrologists, get our hands on these patients and we've made that diagnosis. What have we got to work with and what have we got to achieve to stop that patient developing kidney failure in their lifetime? And I would just ask you to bear in mind that 2 mL/min/year when you look at any of the data from any of the clinical trials that are coming out now and what we're achieving in a 2-year period when we're calling the patient every 6 weeks, we're making sure their blood pressure is controlled, we make sure they're taking their tablets, got a highly motivated group of patients for a 2-year period, what do you think is the best we can possibly achieve? And I'll let you go away and have a look at that. But I can tell you now we come nowhere near close to 2 mL/min/year, even during a 2-year clinical trial. And coming to this guy, so we got this magic number of 1 gram, KDIGO say it, and I can tell you now we're reviewing the KDIGO guidelines, and it won't surprise you that we might be changing this threshold. But if you look here in the UK, if it's going to move, there we go. If you look at that box there, 0 to 0.5 gram, 0.5 gram to 1 gram, in the UK, if you have that level of proteinuria, at 10 years, 1 in 4 of those patients is on dialysis. So this 1 gram is an arbitrary number, and I think we're going to need to review that, remembering this guy is 28 and he's got another 50 years of life to live with those kidneys. So, of course, the KDIGO currently says 1 gram. It's the threshold at which we might want to add additional treatment. And a lot of people think it's a threshold we want to aspire to achieve and get below with the treatments we have. But I think the data, certainly from the UK, and we'll need to see data coming out from other countries to validate this, would suggest that 1 gram is just not good enough in young people who have got 30 to 40 to 50 years of life ahead of them if they're going to avoid kidney failure in their lifetime. We know that proteinuria is very good at predicting what's likely to happen, certainly the speed at which you're going to develop kidney failure. And we heard from Leslie yesterday that actually changes in proteinuria in response to therapeutic interventions is a very good indicator also of the potential long-term protective effect of a treatment. So this guy's been put on an ARB. He's still got 1 gram of proteinuria, but he's clearly going to do better than if he wasn't on an ARB. But he's not going to do perfectly well. He needs additional treatment. So we can see that there's a response. We can see that's going to protect and slow the rate of GFR decline, but the GFR is still going to decline. And we need to layer treatments on top of that to prevent the incessant loss of kidney function and him developing kidney failure when he's in his 50s or 60s. We have a lot of information in front of us when we see a patient, but we are obsessed with proteinuria and probably GFR, and we often don't use the other information. And I'm conscious we've got a pathologist here who will tell us how important the kidney biopsy is, but we really should be thinking more innovatively about how we use the data we have in front of us. So just a quick question, just a hands up. How many people have the IgA nephropathy risk prediction tool on their phone and use it in routine clinical practice? So not very many. Okay, so this was initially produced using data from over 5,000 global IgA nephropathy patients, and it identified the features that independently predict outcome. And you can see here the features that if we were to think it from scratch, we probably have thought would be relevant anyway. But this study proved that. So you can see kidney biopsy features, you can see race, you can see blood pressure, GFR, proteinuria. All the things that we know are important in predicting risk. Not just proteinuria, because each of these add value to our risk prediction. This has been validated. It's now been available to be used up to 2 years following the kidney biopsy. But what I think fundamentally it tells us is there's more than just proteinuria when we're assessing our patients. And I think this is perhaps the most important slide you can see. So what I'm going to show you here on the right-hand side, I'll just talk you through it. So this is the five-year risk on the horizontal axis and the proportion of patients on the vertical axis. And if you just look at those patients in this cohort who had less than a gram of proteinuria, and you worked out what their risk of a doubling of serum creatinine, end-stage kidney disease, or death was within the next 5 years, you can see their risk plotted. And you did the same with those with more than 1 gram of proteinuria. And you can see that there's a large number of... If you said, let's just say, if there's an 11% risk of end-stage kidney disease, doubling of serum creatinine, we're going to intervene. Let's just say that's your risk. If you look at that as a threshold probability of 11%, you can see that there are a significant number of people with high levels of proteinuria who have a very low risk. But most importantly, there's a significant number of people with lower than 1 gram of proteinuria who have a significant risk of doubling of serum creatinine. And if we just use proteinuria, we're going to miss those people. So that is really the caution in terms of just basing a decision on proteinuria. Yes, it's a very good biomarker. And I wish we had better biomarkers. And Jan's going to tell us all about the challenges of how we identify new biomarkers in this disease, because we are desperate for new biomarkers. But what this is telling us is that, yes, we use proteinuria at the moment, but we probably could do better. And we need to focus our attention on how we better risk stratify our patients and how we can use that to make clinical decisions. So I'm going to come back to the case. But I think, for me, this guy needs more treatment. He's only 28. And we need to be thinking about what he's going to be like when he's 58.
As I had alluded to in my presentation, data presented during Kidney Week 2023 further support the RADAR registry outputs. There were two posters presented that utilised data from US healthcare databases. The first, by Catherine Tuttle, on behalf of the Cure CKD investigators, interrogated 4 million electronic health records from the Providence and UCLA health systems. 1,100 adult patients with IgA nephropathy, diagnosed between 2016 and 2020, were followed from 6 months post-diagnosis to the last recorded eGFR measure and the incidence of a major adverse kidney disease event composite outcome was recorded for each patient. Major adverse kidney disease events were common in patients with IgA nephropathy. Those with a UPCR greater than 0.7 grams per gram were twice as likely to experience a major adverse kidney disease event than those with UPCRs less than 0.7 grams per gram. The second study by John Sim on behalf of Kaiser Permanente Southern California members described kidney outcomes among a diverse IgA nephropathy population and again confirmed a high rate of kidney failure. Baseline eGFR, male sex, hypertension, diabetes, hematuria and age over 65, all identified as predictors of kidney failure and CKD progression. In conclusion, the data presented during Kidney Week 2023 from the US IgA nephropathy population correlates well with the UK RADAR data and reinforces the need for us to take a long-term view when managing our IgA nephropathy patients. Achieving proteinuria targets of less than 1 gram per day, as per current guidelines, is not enough to stave off the risk of long-term complications. And with the availability of new therapies, our approach to managing IgA nephropathy should now be targeted at minimising the risk of kidney failure in the lifetime of our patients. I'd like to thank you for joining us today. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rare Kidney Disease Show, which is part of the RKD Scientific Network hosted by Travere Therapeutics.
Thank you for joining us on another episode of the Rare Kidney Disease Show, part of the RKD Scientific Network and powered by Travere Therapeutics.